This is World Soccer Talk Radio here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. I am your presenter, Nate Abaurea. Thank you so much for making the show a part of your daily plans live on all of our fantastic Sports Byline Radio affiliates across the U.S. of A. Thanks for subscribing to us in a podcast form on iTunes, TuneIn, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, and of course, WorldSoccerTalk.com. Special hello to the men and women overseas listening on the American Forces Network. Leave us a review on iTunes when you get a chance and get involved in the Twitter game at World Soccer Talk for updates on the show at Sports Byline USA and to get a hold of me with the love mail and the hate mail and your fantastic Seinfeld soccer manager tweets. Get at me at Nate WST. If you didn't get a chance to listen to the show yesterday where we had Swedish author Oscar Oberg on, or you haven't been on Twitter in the last 24 hours, get on it. Check me out at Nate WST. We posed the question, which Seinfeld character would make the best soccer manager? Some of these responses were absolutely fantastic. Shout out to Dan Chubbuck, at Dan Chubbuck. Jay Peterman. Ooh, that's a good one. And I wrote back, I said, I think Jay Peterman already manages in the Premier League, in fact. He just goes by the alias Alan Pardew, Silver Fox. Oh, Bo McMillan at Gam Link said Frank Costanza. He just wants to see a manager on the touchline yelling serenity now for 90 minutes. Oh, that one is good. Shout out to at Jace O'Ravis _3, the soup Nazi. He would run a very tight ship. Good pick there, Jace. Gregory at Poppy Grego says Elaine. All right, get some female managers in there. I like it. Pizza King at Nickel by 123. Cosmo Kramer. Now, I said this on the show yesterday. I said that Jurgen Klopp, I feel like he has a little bit of Cosmo Kramer in him. Maybe a little bit more grounded than Cosmo Kramer. But Jurgen Klopp and Kramer, I feel like they fell from the same tree. Frank Costanza, another pick for Kramer. Bob Cobb, ooh, the maestro. Good pick there from KWitch19. Tim Watley, that pick from Dano Souter. I like that one. Adaptable, engaging, and he loves jokes. The dentist, that's right, Dr. Tim Watley. Newman, he'd be a crafty, shrewd manager. That one from Danny Mac Attack. And then our good friend Wally Downs actually got at us. That's right, Wally Downs from the Crazy Gang. Wally said he wants the maestro and Frank co-managing with the low talker as the press liaison. My goodness, Wally, cheers to you. We're back with Matt Jones after this on World Soccer Talk Radio. Stay tuned. Welcome back in to World Soccer Talk Radio here on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. I'm your host, Nate Abaurea. Still tweet me. Yes, you can still tweet me at Nate WST. Keep them coming. You guys have been doing some beautiful work in the Twitter sphere over the last couple of days. Get it, all of us at World Soccer Talk. Our guest in this edition of the show, Matt Jones. You know his writing from WorldSoccerTalk.com. He's one of my favorite scousers in all of existence. Matt Jones, how is Liverpool treating you today?
That's not too bad. It's a little bit windy and wet, but to be expected as we get towards the festive period. But now look at me windows, Christmas lights up everywhere, all very scenic and quite nice.
We're officially a month away from Christmas, so I am okay with the Christmas lights now. Even though they're coming out before Thanksgiving, I'm okay with it. We're officially a month away. I hear you have kind of an interesting Christmas tree set up at your place, Matty.
Oh, yeah. The builder is the biggest Christmas tree in the whole of the United Kingdom, but it looks quite like a set of scaffolding with some lights on in a Christmas tree shape. So it's had a bit of a divisive reception from some of the people around here, so to speak.
I spoke in the opening. I let everybody know that we're going to be talking quite a bit about Everton, as well as the club that I support across Stanley Park, Liverpool Football Club. Let's start with your boys. Let's start with your beloved Toffees. Seventh place in the Premier League right now. They're going to win the league. They're going to win the cup. They're going to win everything. Tell me about it, Matty.
Oh, it would be great if we could win one cup. And the fact that we're still in the League Cup at this point of the season, which is a competition which typically Evertonians have fought Everton are cursed in, because even though they, the club have won the league title 9 times. They've won the FA Cup 5 times in the past. It's a competition when even during the greatest periods in the club's history, they've never really got close to winning. So the fact that they're in the semi-final of the League Cup and they've got a chance of ending this ongoing trophy drought, which will be 21 years by the end of this season, is a major positive. But tentatively saying that this season as a whole has gone pretty good. In the first 10 games, the Everton played 8 of last season's top 10. They were in 9th place after those 10 games, which is a pretty decent return and probably around the position a lot of people would have expected them to be in at the start of the campaign. But the last few weeks, admittedly, they played teams like Sunderland. They went to West Ham, in fairness, who were having a good season. And they played, obviously, Aston Villa at the weekend. And there were teams last season that would give Everton problems, because when those sort of sides sat in, they sat deep, they tried to nullify Everton's passing style, which was so prominent in Martinez's first season. And it didn't really, they found it really difficult to cope with those sort of sides. So the fact that Everton seemed to be at ease with taking apart teams like Sunderland, who came with 5 at the back, tried to sit deep and counter attack against teams like Aston Villa, who again at the weekend were very defensive in their outlook. The fact that the scoring goals are on a regular basis against these sort of sides, they're cutting through them with a lot more incision, that's probably the most positive aspect of the whole season so far for me. And when you look at the fixtures that are coming up against supposed lesser sides who may try and adopt similar sort of tactics, it does bode well for a strong finish to the calendar year.
Well, Matt, they're heading down way down south this weekend to take on Bournemouth. Talk about what you're thinking Everton can take away from this one.
Well, on paper, it looks an ideal game for Everton, because Bournemouth are a team who I think, I've watched them a lot of times this season, and the 2 games they played against Liverpool in the league and in the cup resonate with me quite a lot in respect of the fact that in both of those games the general play between defence up to the strikers was good. They were industrious, that they're well organised in their attacking patterns. They moved the ball quickly through the lines, and they've got players who are obviously very well acquainted with the shape that Eddie Howe looks to set up. But at the sharp end of the pitch, they don't seem to have a cutting edge about Callum Wilson. I know they've been decimated by injuries in other areas as well. In goal, they seem to have real issues, whether it's Arto Boroch, who seems to drop a clanger every week, or Adam Federici, who they brought into the side recently. I don't think he's really convinced either. So it's a game that should suit Everton in respect of Bournemouth always seem to attack. They seem to play an expansive brand of football, and what Everton have been really good at in the last few weeks is when they do nick the ball back off opposition teams in dangerous areas, they've got players like Ross Barkley, players like Gerard Deulofeu, Romelu Lukaku, and even Aruna Kone recently, who were really strong carrying the ball forward, breaking through lines and scoring those sorts of counter-attacking goals, like the 4th goal which we saw on Sunday against Aston Villa, moving it really quickly from John Stones into Deulofeu, Barkley, and then Lukaku can get on the end of it. So I think the only issue will be complacency, and hopefully the team don't think it's going to be too easy in a game. And you look at the Bournemouth squad as well, and there's those dreaded ex-players for Everton in the Bournemouth team, Sylvain Distan, Dan Gosling. So you just worry maybe they're going to be up for it. They might have a big game, but if Everton go there and they perform with the same attacking endeavour, the same discipline they have done in the last couple of weeks, then they should be fine.
Well, Matty, when I hear you say someone drops a clanger every week, I always worry that you're talking about me as a radio broadcaster here. But
of course,
we carry on. No, yeah, I'm still riding that perfect record here on World Soccer Talk Radio. Hey, one of the names that we haven't actually brought up yet, and I want to go back to Ross Barkley in a little bit and talk about his experience playing for England recently and what that's really done to elevate his game and really just add to the audacity that he already possesses and that confidence that is definitely within his heart and footballing mind. Tim Howard is someone who you and I have talked with on this show and off air quite a bit. And it was such a bizarre season last year for Tim Howard coming off the World Cup. And a lot of people thought he was crap in a lot of ways for Everton. And people were saying, hey, wow, he's had this long spell here. He's a fan favorite, but even fan favorites have to be steadily pushed to the side once they reach that point. It's as if Timmy's had a bit of a renaissance. I don't know if it was the international sabbatical that did it for him. What can you credit it to? Because I feel like I'm watching not necessarily the Tim Howard of his prime, but definitely better than the Tim Howard of last season for Everton.
I think he's definitely been better in the last few weeks in respect of the fact that the team as a whole has been a lot better. It's kind of took a lot of pressure off him. And I think even though Phil Jagielka is a player who is obviously Everton's captain, he's had quite a good season. He's a good partner for John Stones. But I think bringing in someone like Ramiro Funes-Mori, who was a summer signing for Everton from River Plate, and there's a big question mark over him, really, and whether he'd be fit for the Premier League, whether his style would suit English football. And what he's done is he's a more front-foot defender. He's an aggressive defender. He goes and wins headers in the box. And what was a big issue for Tim Howard, and it has been a big issue this season, and I know you mentioned there he's had a sort of renaissance in the last few weeks, but the first you know, two-thirds of what we've played so far, he was really poor, and there were some big questions from Everton fans regarding his place in the team, and probably the biggest swell of support to get him out the side and to bring in someone like Joe Robles, who came in for the cup games and has done pretty well so far this season. So I think having someone like Funes-Mori in the team has really helped him in that sense. But it's an area of big concern for me still, because I look at some of the goals that Everton have conceded so far this season, particularly crosses into the box. You think back to the Merseyside derby game when Danny Ings, granted, he was let go in the area by his marker, but if you're stooping and heading a ball in 6 yards out from a corner, that's the goalkeeper's area. And it's not just that one occasion. It's been against Arsenal, there were two goals in the game, one from Giroud, one from Koscielny from a free kick. Again, Tim Howard's area, he wasn't decisive enough. So it's an area Everton need to look at really going forward, because Tim Howard turns 37 this season. Like you mentioned, he has been a really good servant for the club. He's been at Everton for 10 years now at the end of this season. So it'll be a due testimonial and all the things that come with that. But it's an area they need to look at, and something that I think Roberto Martinez and the way he's handled the situation has drawn a lot of criticism from quite a few Everton fans over it, in respect of he seems to be guaranteed his place in the team where other players aren't given the same sort of luxury. So it's an area of concern. I think hopefully these last few games will have enriched Howard with a bit more confidence and will give him a bit better end of the year. But I'd like to see, as a matter of, or as a primary target in January, I'd like to see Everton go out and sign a new goalkeeper.
Well, Matty, I'll give you that, because look, I'm so focused on the present moment here, and you talk about the last few weeks where Tim Howard, in my opinion, has actually looked quite good. But I'm glad that you brought up the beginning of the season, when actually it felt like the 2014-15 campaign had kind of carried on into the 15-16 one here in the Prem and everywhere else for Tim Howard. But In the last few weeks, I'm seeing this trending in the right direction for Tim Howard. But you say, you ended that whole thing right there by saying that you expect or hope at least for Everton to go out and get another goalkeeper in January. Will Tim Howard be the starting goalkeeper for Everton through May of 2016, in your opinion, Matt?
I think he will. I think Roberto Martinez still sees him as a player who can bring a lot to the team. I think in a back four which contains players such as Funes-Mori, who were noted there, who's new to the league, someone like John Stones, again, even though he belies his years and the way he plays the game, the composure he plays with, he is someone who's a young player. Brendan Galloway's been playing at left back for most of the season. He's another young player. So I think he likes to have a goalkeeper in the team, like Howard, who's experienced, try and get that blend right at the back. But there's been a lot of polls on, I think after the Norwich game, when Everton played Norwich City in the cup and Joe Robles was brought in for that game, it was directly after the Arsenal match that was aforementioned, when Howard made a couple of bad mistakes, and Robles made really good saves in that game. Everton actually won the match on a penalty shootout, and there was a real swell from supporters to get him in the team. And some polls conducted on various websites like the Liverpool Echo, like Toffee TV, there was 90% of fans more or less wanted Robles in the team for the next game. And it's, Martinez obviously sees some value in him, but it's not an opinion shared by a lot of supporters. And the fact that he seems to be able to walk straight back into the side, it's the second time this has happened now. There was a spell last season when Howard was injured, Robles came into the team, did well, but was taken back out again. The fact that he seems to be able to walk back into the team, for me and for a lot of Everton fans, doesn't really send the right message in respect of young players who will be looking to break into the team. if they're looking at the squad and thinking there's guaranteed places in this side, it's not good for squad morale. So it's an area of concern. Martinez has done a lot of good things so far this season, but that's one area I think he could have handled a lot better, and hopefully he will look to address in January. But even if he does bring in a goalkeeper in January, I can't foresee him immediately upsetting Howard. At least,
well, we've got Matt, we've got a lot of Everton supporters that listen to this show on a daily basis. So I ask all of you Everton fans out there, tweet us at World Soccer Talk and get at me at NateWST. Let us know, will Tim Howard be the Everton goalie through the end of the season? And part two, should Tim Howard be the Everton goalkeeper starting week in, week out through the end of the season? Again, at NateWST and at World Soccer Talk. We're back with more with Matt Jones right here on World Soccer Talk Radio, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Stay tuned.
You're listening to World Soccer Talk Radio with your host, Nate Abarea, on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network.
We are back here on World Soccer Talk Radio, Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. Matt Jones alongside yours truly, Nate Abarea. You can check out some of Matt's writing on that website that you know so well, worldsoccertalk.com. You can also listen to the show via worldsoccertalk.com. We talked all about Tim Howard there at the end of that last segment. It's time to talk about what many people are looking at the future, looking at as part of the future of the English national team. And they're both Everton players. It's Ross Barkley. It's John Stones. Matt, how you feeling about these two Toffees being talked about as three lions for a decade to come?
Well, hopefully there'll be Everton players for a decade to come. Never mind England stars. But yeah, well, I mean, I'll take John Stones first. He's a player who just continues to impress, and it's remarkable, really, when you consider what was going on this summer with the Chelsea interest and the transfer request he put in. Everton subsequently refused the transfer request, and there seems to be a clamour for him to make the move to Chelsea, and why he needed to go to get Champions League football. And for a lad who's only 21, he's quite humble from what I've heard. He's someone who's quite a sensitive personality as well. For him to take everything in his stride that went on and produce the performances that he's been producing this season, it's a credit to the player. And it's not a position in the Premier League where you see young players typically thrive centre-back, and it's so unforgiving. It's so fast-paced. If you make a mistake, you typically punish, but he's a player that just continues to get better and better. And this season, he's added more areas to his game. He's becoming a leader on the pitch. He's a lot more vocal, whether it's talking to someone like Brendan Galloway, who I mentioned in the first part, telling him which position to be in, helping other young players through the game, even shouting at players like Phil Jagielka and Tim Howard at times as well. He's got that confidence about him, and his distribution's often mentioned in the way that he's a ball-playing centre-back. It's something unique for English football. But his defensive work as well has got so much better this season. He sees things really quickly. He tackles the ball superbly. His legs are like kaleidoscopes, the way they stretch out and block passes and block shots. He's quick across the ground. He's strong in the air. And I've got no issue in saying I think if he had gone to Chelsea this summer, the lad would have been doing himself a real disservice. I think he's got all the attributes and all the qualities to eventually play for a team like Barcelona, Real Madrid or Bayern Munich. And I really think he's that good. And that's something, like you mentioned there, where now he seems to be taking that onto the international stage. And when England played France in a friendly game last week, he was outstanding in that as well, up against some real top quality French attackers. So he's someone that I think is going to go to the very top. And obviously said in jest there, hopefully he'll be an Everton player for the next 10 years. I don't think any Everton fan realistically expects him to be at the club for that amount of time. But if he does leave, he owes it to himself to go to one of the very biggest clubs in the world.
Well, now, Matt, what is reasonable to expect as an Everton fan, considering what we just saw in the last offseason with Mr. John Stones? What is a reasonable expectation as far as how long he'll stick around? Because I can't help but wonder here, and I'm not trying to stir the pot, but considering what we just saw a few months ago, I feel like we're going to see it again with how well he's playing, not only for Everton, but for the English national team. It's going to be the Stone saga part two in the summer of 2016.
Yeah, I agree. I've no doubt they'll be interested in the player, but he's got 4 years left on his contract at Everton. He signed a new deal in the summer. The summer before last, a 5 year contract. And Everton have shown in the last summer that they're not going to be dictated to. And while the club haven't got much money, they don't spend too much on players. What Roberto Martinez has mentioned time and time again is this crop of exciting young players that the team have got, the likes of Stones, Brendan Galloway, James McCarthy, Lukaku, Deulofeu, Ross Barkley, and how it's important that they preserve that core. And it's, you know, you hear managers say this all the time about how they want to keep the best young players intact, but Everton showed in the summer that they're not going to be dictated to in that sense. And I think a lot of fans, the main concern is that eventually the world will come, an offer come in that's going to be too good to refuse. Hopefully Everton have reaped the benefits of these young players by the time those offers do come in. By the time it's got to a point where Everton can no longer resist those sorts of offers, and they're in a much better position because of it. I just hope this group now, obviously mentioned in the first part about winning a trophy, this is a team which is fearless. It's attacking. It's getting better and better every week. I think they owe it to itself, and for hopefully a lot of Everton fans as well, they do go and make something tangible of it. Go and win a trophy. Go and push and finish in the top four, and then the club, even if they do go on to leave, will be in a much better position eventually.
Well, one of my favorite quotes there on John Stones. John Stones, legs like kaleidoscopes. Write that one down back in the studio in San Francisco. We have definitely got to get that one flowing on Twitter. John Stones, legs like kaleidoscopes. Matt, you know how much I love Goodison Park. You know how near and dear Goodison Park is to me. Actually went to my first Everton match when I was 8 years old. I've told the story on this show quite a few times, and you know what? I'm going to tell it again right now. And it's the one of me being 8 years old, Everton playing Sheffield Wednesday, a Saturday 3 o'clock match at Goodison. And during the halftime announcements of the scores on the public address system there at Goodison, what was it? It was the first one, you know, Manchester United 2, Middlesbrough 0. And then the next one, it went Liverpool 1, Nottingham Forest 0. And without even thinking about this, I just impulsively jumped up and went, yeah! And I had about 100 people turn back and just stare me right in the eyes. I am pooping bricks. I'm blushing. I'm scared to death. And I see people almost like rising out of their seats at me. And I'm going, I'm only 8. Don't hurt me. Oh, my God. And I'll never forget this big, large Catholic lady a few feet away from me. She just looks over at everybody and goes, he doesn't know any better. Leave him alone. And I just looked back at this lady and I said, you just saved my life. Thank you oh so much. All right. So now that we've shared that, you know how much Goodison means to me. I have loved the atmosphere at Goodison Park this year. I'm not going to lie. There seemed to be a little bit of toxicity last year at Everton with the way that season went, as far as how the crowd would sometimes, I don't want to say turn on their team, but people were even joking, calling Goodison White Hart Lane North and all that goes with that. I haven't picked up on any of that this year. We've got 45 seconds before we got to head to a break here, Matt. What can you credit that to besides just the good play from Everton? There's got to be something more to it. Everybody seems like they're being pretty positive.
Well, the first game of the season actually wasn't that much better. It was we played Watford at home, and it seemed very much the same sort of thing. We could see the cheap goals, and then we got back into it. But I think the manner in which they handled the John Stones situation this summer was crucial to fans. I think I'm sure everyone's seen, there's been a lot of discontent in the fan base. There's people flying planes off the stadium, etc. But the fact that Everton puffed the chest out when dictated to by Chelsea, and they kept one of the best young prospects in the country, it kind of emboldened the fans a little bit. It gave everyone a lift going to the game. And the first game back after that transfer, the debacle was Everton against Chelsea, and the team played really, really well that day, 1-3-1. And they've basically been riding the same sort of emotion, well, the momentum has been built from that match, and the atmosphere has been a lot better. And when you score 10 goals in your last two home games, as has been the case the last couple of matches, that's always going to help.
They're getting them going, Matty, and I don't care too much for money, because money can't buy you stones. One of the best songs that I've ever heard from any supporters group ever. Good on you, Toffees. Love you. We're back after this on World Soccer Talk Radio, taking a little trip across Stanley Park, talking Reds. Stay tuned. What to say. Sometimes I hear the echoes of laughter. Oh, we're back. World Soccer Talk Radio here with you on the Sports Byline Broadcasting Network. We're whistling that whole break. Matt Jones alongside yours truly, Nate Abaurea. And our show today is brought to you by Audible. I've got a free book for you. The real challenge with Audible is to pick which book. They've got 180,000 titles, bestsellers, fiction, biographies, you name it. So many good soccer books to choose from, including the new business book from Sir Alex Ferguson. That guy, you may have heard of him. It's entitled Leading. He shares his insight about the leadership skills he used at Manchester United. It really came down to one thing. We've actually talked about this on the show quite a bit. He said, no player is going to make more money than me. That was the number one leadership tool there for Alex Ferguson at Manchester United. There's the John Motson autobiography. There's the Bobby Charlton book, The Secret Footballer's Guide to the Modern Game. There's oh so many more. And you can get the Daily Digest of the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal. And I will give you a link for a free audiobook. Listen up. And all of this stuff is available to you for free for 30 days, and you can cancel during the first 30 days anytime. You pay absolutely nothing, and the book is yours to keep forever and ever. But I think you'll be hooked. I think you'll stick around with Audible. It's a great way to listen to your favorite authors on your commute or at the gym or wherever you need them. And here's the deal. This is what you need to write down. Get your free audiobook today. Free. Absolutely free. Gratis. Free audiobook today at audibletrial.com/worldsoccertalk. Your first month absolutely free. You get a free audiobook that is yours to keep no matter what. Sign up today. audibletrial.com/worldsoccertalk. audibletrial.com/worldsoccertalk. Huge thank you to Audible for their support of the show. All right, Matty, we've talked all about your Toffees. It's time to take a little trip across the park and head over to Anfield. But I want to talk to you. I want to get an Evertonian's perspective on what's going on at Liverpool right now. Because when I'm talking to the lads from the full-time Devils, when I'm talking to Gooners down in North London, when I'm talking to people who normally despise my team, who have nothing but hatred for the team that I love in Liverpool, and I'm hearing positivity coming from all of these people. When I hear Manchester United supporters, when I hear Gaz and Adam from the full-time Devils telling me, God, I love Jurgen Klopp. It pains me to say this, Nate, but God, I love him. He's so awesome in every way. He just oozes positivity and just makes me happy and makes me smile and makes me love the game even more. How are you feeling as an Evertonian looking at this thing through Toffee eyes? How are you feeling about Jurgen Klopp not only being a part of English football, but being a part of the city of Liverpool?
I'm still trying to find something I don't like about him, to be honest. I'm searching. I'm waiting. I'm sure it won't take very long. There'll be something he says up to us. But no, on a serious note, I'd echo the sentiments of the lad you just mentioned there. He's got a real aura about him, hasn't he? And I think when you speak about the really great managers, the likes of Ferguson you mentioned there, and all those real top figures, he's someone who's got that same sort of intangible quality. And at the moment, Liverpool, I've always thought that the truest reflection of a manager is what you see on the pitch and the way that the team plays. And at the moment, Liverpool are a total reflection of Jurgen Klopp, the way that they seem to be enjoying the football, the attacking, the way that they press the ball, they hunt impacts, and that seems to be transcended into the city as well. And when he first took over, the buzz around Liverpool it was noticeable that there were fans who were uplifted, and even though I think Brendan Rodgers did quite a good job all in all, I think it did seem like the right time for a change. And you mentioned there in the first half about the Goodison Park atmosphere and how it kind of deteriorated a little bit over last season. You'd watch games on the telly at Anfield, and it was in a malaise. It was, the fans weren't really singing, the team weren't very inspirational, and it was kind of, each was kind of waiting for the other to trigger the other one into action. And what he's done, he's just given everybody a lift. And yeah, it's looking annoyingly positive, unfortunately, Nate.
When are you going to find something that you hate about him?
I don't know. I'm sure there'll be something eventually, though. I'm sure maybe in a derby game or something like that, when Liverpool get one of the dodgy penalties and he says it wasn't. So something, it'll be something.
Oh, I love it. How are the rest of the city? I mean, you're there. You're on the pulse of this thing. And expand on this a little bit. I know you touched on it there already, but talk about whether it's either side of Stanley Park, whether it's Everton fans, whether it's Liverpool fans. How much people over there, and this is, I think, really true to the Scouse core, at least what I've heard, and that is how much people seem to be appreciating how he has already taken to the city, how he says, hey, you learn about the city, you learn about the place that's going to be my new home in the pubs. You learn about it by interacting with the truest of middle-class people in this city. That's how I'm going to endear myself to all of them. Has he followed through on that? Have you heard anything in that regard?
I think he did initially. He was when he first got the job, he was in a hotel up by the cathedrals, I believe, and then he was out having a few drinks around at a pub called the Old Blind School, and then he was in a cafe called the Quarter, and I think he mentioned that in one of his press conferences. Actually, he's going to have to stop doing it because he's getting so many photographs taken of him, and it looks as though he's just out in pubs and having meals all the time. So I think he's probably curtailed that a little bit, but he's moved out of the city now into an area called Sefton, which is a little bit more affluent. So, you know, within reason, I think he seems to be integrating himself into it. Obviously, he can't go around and have a drink like someone like you or me would in after the game or something like that.
Oh, well, go give me a break, Matty. They're taking pictures with you too. Come on, I know it.
I doubt that very much, but no, it's just little things, really. You see, there was a lad in on the high street yesterday with a jacket and glasses and a cap on. He looked like him getting photos. I seen a video today on the Liverpool Twitter feed where there was a 9-year-old lad teaching him Scouse lingo and, you know, give it bifters and stuff like that, all these Scouse terminologies, and he was trying to do so. All those little things, and the fact that he's trying to immerse himself in the culture of the city, which, in fairness, for somewhere like Liverpool, it's quite unique. It's a lot different to other places in the country. The fact that he's doing that has endeared him to a lot of people, and you can see why Liverpool fans love him. And at the moment, I personally couldn't think of a manager who's a better fit in terms of personality, in terms of the way he plays, the way he wants his teams to play, and where Liverpool need to go and what they need to build from and what they want to become. I can't think of a better manager in world football for the job, really.
Can we do a little translation right now? Because I absolutely loved that video that LSC TV put out with the kid, the 9-year-old kid doing the translation. Yeah. Can you, for our World Soccer Talk Radio listeners that haven't seen this video, can you translate giving it bifters for us?
It just means trying really hard, like, you know, giving it everything sort of thing.
All right, and what does it mean when someone in Liverpool says that's boss?
It's bosta. Boss that, mate, yeah. But I think Klopp said that in his interview after the game against Manchester City. I think he actually used that line himself. So, yeah, it's anyone who's not watched that video, it is really funny, to be fair.
Definitely check it out. And hey, we had Lawrence McKenna on the show actually a few days ago, another resident Scouser. And so I have to ask you, I asked Lawrence this on the show, what is your favorite pub on Merseyside, Matt?
Oh, mine's it's one called the Ship and Mitre. I don't know. I'm sure everyone's heard of the Mersey Tunnels. It's one right by the Mersey Tunnel. It doesn't actually show any football in there or anything. It's just got a massive variety of different beers and ales, and it's a place we go to before the match quite often. So, yeah, the Ship and Mitre, it's called.
The Ship and Mitre. I said this. I swear to God, I'm going to have to get these guys to start paying me because I'm giving them ample shout outs here on my show. But the Flute was actually a place that I spent quite a bit of time in when I was 14. in there. I won't get the flute in trouble, but I was 14, had a great time in the flute. And we will continue this conversation here away from the pub. We're going to step back in to the radio studio here because I don't want to get anybody in trouble here. Matt, let's get back to your side. Let's get back to the team that you support with all your heart. Let's get back to Everton and talk realistic goals right now. I mean, you and me when we're shooting it off air. I mean, we're joking even as we start this thing. Oh, you know, seventh place. By God, they could keep rising. But what's realistic for Everton right now? Because when you look at this Premier League, I'll tell you what. I can't remember a year that looks like it had more parity than what's going on in the Premier League right now. It's deeper than just Leicester City. It's West Ham. It's Crystal Palace. It's Everton. It's these teams that are right there. It's Liverpool under Klopp suddenly in ninth place with people talking about them like they're top of the table. I mean, 1 through 10, it feels like everybody's got a shot to get something done. I mean, whether it's top four, whether it's Europa League. So, tying that back to your side, what is a realistic expectation for Everton with where we stand right now?
It's really tough to say, just because of all the factors you've mentioned there. I think a lot of it depends on the injuries and whether they can keep players fit. And you look at Romelu Lukaku this season, for example. He's the second highest goal scorer in the Premier League. He's got 9 goals, 5 assists. He's a player who is essentially irreplaceable for Everton. If he was to get an injury, although Rúben Kovács done pretty well this season in his few games, he's not got the same presence up front. He's not got the same goal-scoring instincts as someone like Romelu Lukaku. So it is dependent on variables. If Everton keep that core fit of players, John Stones, Barkley, McCarthy, Lukaku, and Gerard Deulofeu continues to play at the astonishing levels that he's reached recently, then they've got every chance of challenging for the top four. And without the Europa League, which is something which was to the detriment last season, they have got a chance. And one of the things that's resonated with me quite a lot this season is not necessarily the fatigue issue when it was the Europa League last season. It's more the fact that Martinez is someone whose teams have always attacked well. They've always had patterns in their attack and play. And that was scarce last season, and I imagine a lot of that was to do with not having the time to work on their attacking systems, how they're going to approach the game in attacking sense, and that's something that's resurfaced recently, and that will be to the benefit massively if in the second half of the season when the games do start to add up for teams like Liverpool, teams like Tottenham, who are going to be in the Europa League. So if you can keep everybody fit, I'd say a top four challenge is definitely on, but it all depends on whether players like Lukaku, like Stones, and like Barkley do have an injury-free season.
Well, let's end by focusing on Ross Barkley, one of my favorite players in all of English football right now, and someone who means the world to Everton fans for so many reasons. And there was a little bit of a slump last year, a bit of a lull, a bit of a confusion with Ross Barkley. Oh, we got too high on the youngster. We put too many expectations on him. I mean, he was still had some outstanding moments last season, but I feel like there's something different. There's something brewing with Barkley again, and whether it's has he gained the confidence in an England uniform and brought it back to Goodison Park? Has it been, you know, a little bit of both? What's been the keys for Ross Barkley this year, and how do you think he's going to keep this up?
I think the key for him this season has been positional consistency and getting a prolonged run of games in the side. Last season, it's often forgotten, he picked up a bad injury on the first day of the campaign, and he didn't return to the side until November. And when he did come back into the side, Everton was struggling. Martinez shifted him around the team. He played as a number 10, played as an orthodox central midfield player. He played on the left, he played on the right hand side, and he didn't really get a consistent run. And fans were getting on his back, as is often the case with local players, that they're a lot more hotly scrutinised than others in the side. But this season, obviously, he's had a rest in the summer. There's no World Cup, and he's come back into the side. And Martinez has just said to him to play in that position just off Romelu Lukaku. He's got a lot more freedom in his game, and he's just really kicked on. And he was outstanding for the first couple of months of the season. Tailed off a little bit as of late in games against Manchester United, against Liverpool, wasn't quite at the same level, but he's someone against, for England, again, he performed well there, he came back emboldened, and he's looked a lot better again in the last few weeks. And what's been encouraging for me is, especially with that game against Aston Villa at the weekend, is he's scoring scrappy goals now. And I know we all love to see him banging in shots from 30 yards with his right foot and his left foot, but if he's an attacking midfield player, he needs to be getting into the box and picking up these scrappy goals, like Tim Cahill used to do at his best for Everton, just always following up, always in the right sort of areas. And if he can add that to his game, he started getting more assists as well this season. He's a lot more incisive around the penalty area. He started adding assists and goals to his game, as well as his ability to carry the ball, his ability to take on players. Then he is going to be a major force. And there's still areas he needs to improve in, don't get me wrong, but this season, the signs have been hugely positive for him.
Well, I love the shout out to Tim Cahill right there. And if Ross can take a little page out of the Tim Cahill book, and then we'll see if he goes over and has a boxing match with the corner flag the way Timmy used to do. Matt Jones, you find his work on worldsoccertalk.com. You also find him on Toffee TV. And real quickly, how can they get a hold of you on Twitter, Matt?
It's Matt J Football, so really easy.
At Matt J Football. He's always giving it bifters when he's on this show. Thank you so much, Matty. Always a pleasure. And best of luck this weekend for your Toffees down on the South Coast.
Likewise. Thanks very much for having me on these.
Again, that was Matt Jones. We're back after this on World Soccer Talk Radio, taking the express train home. Little turkey trot to the finish line. Stay tuned. Daddy said the same thing. Another big thank you to Matt Jones. Again, check out his writing on worldsoccertalk.com and check out his work with Toffee TV. Everton through and through. Good friend Matt Jones. And favorite quote of that whole show, John Stone. He's got legs like kaleidoscopes. Thank you oh so much again to all you beautiful folks out there in the Twitter sphere for those Seinfeld football manager tweets. Who of all the Seinfeld characters would make the best soccer manager? One that I didn't mention there way back in the beginning of the show, Jackie Childs. That's right, the lawyer, Jackie Childs. Talk about detail-oriented. I'm telling you, Jackie Childs would make a damn fine football manager. And George Costanza? Kind of reminds me of Miguel Herrera. George Costanza as a football manager would be Miguel Herrera. There you go. Hope you enjoyed that one. Thanks again to Matt. Thanks to the producers in SF. Thanks to the gaffer, Chris Harris. My name is Nate Abaurea. Have a happy Thanksgiving. We're off for a couple of days. Love you. Talk to you Monday the 30th. Cheers.